to another episode of The Danger Room. I'm your host, Mike, and with me I have returning Christmas guest Anders, also known as Caller on Discord. How you doing?
Hey man, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. We are right off the back of the CGR nerfs, so we're loving life.
Yeah, I mean, and you went through, you had sort of the final trial by fire going up against TGR in the LVO, and then the weekend after, he's just, yeah, okay.
Yeah, the universe really was like, time to go through the 9 levels of hell before we fix this.
Holy crap. Yeah, well played. Congratulations on your very well-earned place at LVO, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. I remember you messaged me like Saturday night for me?
Yeah.
I won all my games, and you were like, oh, hell yeah, dude, like, beat 2 Guardians players. And then, like, the next day you're like, holy crap, you're paired into another Guardians player.
Yeah, I think my main thing was, when you were still undefeated, I said, I either hope you win this, or else we have 4 Guardians in top 4, so AMG does something. Yep. So, yeah. I mean,
we kind of got the ladder, I mean.
Kind of got the ladder, so that's okay, I guess. You took one for the team, man.
Yeah, I'll take it. No, it was fun. But yeah, listeners, if you didn't listen to that episode, the LVO episode with Sploosh is pretty good, in my opinion. So go give that a listen.
Yeah, I liked it.
So I brought Anders on. Okay, so I guess I should say I brought him on because there's something I noticed at WTC when I was there. And it was that the Europeans just don't tilt as much as the Americans. And I'm like, there might be something here. I feel like all the Europeans, especially the Swedes, all of them are just robots. I'm like, this is why we're losing.
There's some truth to that, at least from my team. I have been trying to spread the gospel, so to speak. But I think the tilt, it's the mind killer, to make a Dune reference. Like, we have, when you tilt, you start making non-optimal decisions, and you start to make decisions based on what is basically wrong information. And everyone tilts. That's just a fact. Everyone will tilt at one point or another. It's just a matter of how you manage it and how often you tilt. We literally had a few players that we knew about in WTC in our little roster that said we knew prone to tilt. so
wait, so that you had opponents marked?
We had some opponents marked as prone to tilt because I don't think it actually ended up happening, but I think one of the things was, if we can put this player into a situation where one of our players can, we know one of our players are good, or they're playing something that could have very high variance, and that variance just kicks in, that's a small edge. It didn't end up actually mattering, but we did have a few players that we knew from TTS League, or that we knew from, we've heard about it from other events, that we knew were prone to tilt. So that's how far we went in that mindset.
Yeah, I've actually heard some people behave that way in the TTS league, where they're like, oh, my opponent's like susceptible to being tilted, so I'm just going to talk about the dice a lot.
And then... Yeah, exactly. And I think it's one of those things where I always try to I will apologize if my dice are way too hot, because I mean, I know the feeling as well as being on the other side of like having terrible dice, like you're rolling 6 or 7, 8 dice attacks and they're doing nothing. Your opponent grunts one shot your 5 threat characters. So like these sort of things happen. And like, I know how bad that feels. So I always try to be like community positive, but I also notice that you have those players who will just incessantly rage at the dice. So I figured I would actually share my sort of wisdom on how to basically train your brain in a different way, because that's the key of it. Like, our brains are not built to handle variance of that kind. And the to go on a bit of a tangent, I have a background in poker. I used to play poker semi-professionally while I was studying. I was pretty good at it. I wasn't the best, but I made enough money that I didn't have to work while studying, so that was cool. One of the things that they train you there, if you read some of that literature they have, is your brain is built to try different things, and when it fails, it wants to try something else. So, for example, let's say you're playing golf or baseball or something, and you're practicing your swing. You put the ball up, you put your drive in hand, like you have your drive in hand, you hit the ball, and you see, oh, that was a bad shot. Your brain is telling you, okay, that was bad, you need to do something else. Try this instead. The thing is, your brain does that with high variance games as well. So to use a poker reference, you could be sitting there with an ace and a king, and you have a very high chance of winning, but your opponent hits that out so that, for example, they draw the two cards they need in the deck to beat your hand. Your brain is telling you that you made the wrong call, even though you didn't. You had a higher chance of winning, but the variance didn't pan out. So detaching the result from the call is very important. So, and this is very true in MCP as well. The dice in MCP are known for being high variance, let's put it like that. And these things happen more often than not. Like, you will spike something insane, and you will have... I once lost a local league game because I left my Red Skull 2, who was completely healthy, with just a Toad next to him. Because there's no way Toad is going to one-shot him, right? Well, Toad did one-shot him. And so my brain was telling me this was the wrong decision. Like, you should have activated him before and left the other side, because this lost you the game, basically. But the problem is, like, that isn't true. The call was right. The call was right. Red Skull shouldn't die to 2 4 dice attacks, or 1 4 dice attack and 1 5 dice attack into a 5 dice energy defense. Like, that's not supposed to happen. That is a very low variance chance of that happening. But my brain was telling me that was the wrong call. So training yourself to detach your sort of the result of from the call is a big thing. And like, this took me half a year to up to a year to do in poker. Like, it's a hard thing to do because our brains are not built that way. And it has done me very good in this game. One of those things that I often do when I practice. I practice with Hagebeer a lot of the time. And one of the things is, like, when we discuss, like, games afterwards and discuss the results, one of the things we say is, are you thinking you made the wrong call because the dice just went cold? Or are you thinking that you actually made the wrong call? Which is a big thing. And, like, if if you knew you made the right call and the dice just didn't help you, the dice didn't turn up, or it didn't work out, then you can still be confident in, I made the right call. Now, the problem is you then need to go from that part to being, don't blame the dice, which is also hard, because you have you need to sort of think on another level more than anything, I would say. So, but the big thing is, you need to detach the result from the call, and you need to be able to adapt to new information. So do you have any questions or anything you want to pop in?
Yeah, so I think that last bit, I definitely have, I've gotten better at doing that. I mean, I think maybe my personality helps me a lot in this way. I'm like a naturally reflective person, and I try to find, like, objective truths in things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, I'll definitely, like, make plays, and then, you know, my opponent spikes me or something dumb happens, and mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, well, that completely backfired, but I don't think it was the wrong call.
No, exactly.
And I think it's important for people to go easier on themselves when things like that explode in their face.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I think that in MCP, it is perfectly, like, it is 100% possible to play a 100% perfect game and still fail and lose. Like, you could be making the perfect call in every single situation and then lose. Now, granted, that is maybe a 1 in 100 games, if even that is, because no one makes the perfect calls. That's just how it is. The dice are notoriously bad to being able to predict any sort of good result, because the variance is so high. So, but there's the possibility of playing everything right and still lose. And that's not a reflection of you as a person. That's just how things pan out. I think that's, I mean, one of the things we used to talk about in War Machine was growth mindset, which is basically you're always looking to improve. Like you're viewing the games as a way to improve more than sort of like a, how to put it, like a self-actualized, oh, no, that's a bad thing, but sort of like proving yourself.
It's like growth mindset versus like outcome, like you're less outcomes driven.
Outcome, exactly, yeah.
You know, like you don't have, there's a lot of people who play this game and they have expectations that they try to win, and then their identity is shattered if they lose or something. Like it means like they're no good or whatever.
Exactly. So like they will turn up to an event. They'll be like, yeah, I'll certainly top four this. And then they lose in the first round. And it's like, holy crap, is that going to mess with your self-esteem and your self-worth? Like that's horrible. You could have like, but it sure would be nice to do top four. Like that's the idea. And you should always set goals, but the goals need to be more sort of like, one big thing is like just taking away from the game, every single game, one thing I could have done better, because that also gets you out of the, I got diced. Because if one thing is certain, no one is good enough to play a near perfect game of MCP yet. That's just how it is. The game is just too many parameters. Like we would be playing chess if that's what we were after. There's so many options you can do, but so taking the whole sort of like, what could I have done better, and doing that even if you win is a big thing, because then you also sort of reflect on your sort of your positive dice variance.
Yeah, the cool part of, I'll interrupt you a sec, the cool part about doing it when you win is that you are definitely not upset that you lost.
Exactly.
So you're like, it's easier to get into a more objective state, like a more objective reflective state.
Absolutely. And I think once you've done it a few times when you win, you end up in a better reflective state when you lose as well. Because then you're sort of in that mindset. You've already like entered that headspace of like, oh, I'm this is my like learning experience. Like two things I did well. That was like, oh, these were good things I did this game. And one or two things that I didn't do too well. And these are things I need to improve. Like I know that I mess up my deployment quite a bit, which is interesting. but having things like, oh, I guess I just put Simo in the middle because I figured that would be cool, and he can move double long to almost anywhere he wants to go. But if he had been over here, he could have attacked the guy who deep dived me that I knew he was setting up. Like that, these sort of things. Like finding one thing that you could improve and finding one or two things that you did well. Sort of like, hey, this worked this time. I think that's a big thing. And I think the whole like getting into the idea that the dice variance is there, and knowing that you have like you almost have perfect information before rolling the dice and then perfect information after rolling dice. Like that's the way with MCP. You don't have any, you have very few random things.
Yeah, the actual Marvel, people say Marvel is like a non-hidden information game, and the truth is the hidden information is the dice result.
That's the only thing. There's nothing else. There's the comparison with Shatterpoint, which I think AMG themselves talked about. Like when they made Shatterpoint, they introduced a lower variance damage system that is a bit up. It's a bit hard to penetrate, but they have a damage system that's like every single character has a max amount of damage that they can do with their damage 3 that they have. But the variance in Shatterpoint is the random activation order. That's where things come in. So you have cards that you pull for who you activate in order. But they made the sort of the comparison with Marvel is that in Marvel you have perfect control. You can choose which character to activate. You can do every action twice if you want to. Like you can do two move actions. You can do two attack actions. All these things. So the variance needs to come from somewhere, and that's from the dice.
So I guess rewinding back, what is it about? So you said something about poker where, you know, you have ace king and like your opponent still beats you. So I guess it's important to just not be upset. But I mean, like, what would be the alternative in poker? Like to fold that? I mean,
the alternative in poker would be to fold that, but that would be the losing move. Because if you have, let's say you have a 90% chance to win the hand, that this is just made up numbers, but you have a 90% chance to win that hand in 9 out of 10 situations. If you end up in that situation for 9 out of 10 situations, you should win that. Like in 9 out of 10 situations, that is the right call, which means that is the call you should probably be making, because that's, you don't know which of these situations it is. The same thing applies in sort of MCP. But the problem is that if you didn't hit, so for example, if this is one of your first games and you hit the sort of the outlier, so they outdraw you basically. Like you've made the right call, but they outdraw you. And the next time you end up in the situation like, oh, the last time I had Ace King, your brain is telling you the last time you had Ace King, you went all in this and you lost everything. You shouldn't do that. That's the wrong move. But it's actually the right move. It's just the way our brain learns and how it interprets things.
So yeah, you could apply this to Marvel in that like there are people who are maybe they think of themselves as more attrition focused or more scenario focused. And then like, let's say the attrition player runs up or charges in, makes a couple attacks and the attacks don't pan out. Their opponent runs away and they're like, they feel defeated, right? Well, it's like, I don't think you necessarily made the wrong call.
No, that was probably right. Like, for example, you could have the classic was when I was playing Malekith, like I would do something like I'd been given a charge with a double tap into Iron Man and I just failed the roll completely. He just flubs the dice. As a non-Malekith player, you love to see it happen, but as a Malekith player, you hate it. So I've basically wasted my seven threat model into a three threat model, hoping to get some result, and it has just absolutely not panned out. And I will start to look at it like, what your brain will start to think, what did you do wrong? What could you have done better to fix this? And like, this was probably the right call. Like, you only need to do five damage. You have pierce. In the old days, you had pierce, you had a throw, you had so many ways of dealing damage and like punching that through. The odds are on your side. That was probably the right call, especially if it's Iron Man who has Helios and he can take out your Malekith. All these parameters flying in your head. If you can get him off the table, that's really good. But so like the next time you'll be like, no, I'm not going to charge Iron Man. I'm going to charge Hawkeye, whatever, because Hawkeye is easier to kill. Yeah, but Hawkeye also isn't as big of a threat to Malekith as Iron Man is. So your brain is sort of feeding you bad feedback, so to speak. Like it's giving you bad feedback on your decision, which is interesting because it isn't equipped to deal with variance in that way.
What would do you have like strategies or ways of thinking about like I guess retraining your brain to think about variance that way? I mean, that maybe this is what we've been talking about the whole time, but
I think the big thing is sort of when you hit a very unexpected result on your dice rolls, take a step back. Think about, does this change the situation I'm in? The classic one is people will start with their character. They don't really know what to do with it, but they'll try one attack into one guy, and they'll fluff the attack. And they'll be like, I guess I'll attack him again. Well, it was probably the right call the first time, because if you manage to get the spike in, you can use the second attack to finish the character off. But if you just absolutely flub the roll, it's time to, you now have a new set of parameters. You only have one attack available. The other character is unharmed. Do you actually just want to feed him power or do you want to get the hell out of dodge? Like sort of taking the step back anytime you have a big spike, either on your side or on the opponent's sides, and you have control to think about, should I be changing what I'm doing now? Should I be adapting to these new situations? And also like, when my character gets spiked out of the sort of, I had one when I was playing Hellfire Club. I was facing, I don't remember who I was playing. It was probably Schmid, I think. And I ran my Black Cat up in front of his Strange Supreme. He only got one attack into her, I believe it was. And because she was outside of stealth range. And I was like, well, he can't use his rerolls. It's going to be fine. And then he just does something like five damage and just one shots her off the table. That was probably still the good call to make. He can't explode his crits, yada, yada. You have all these like defensive techs. Probably, I mean, I'm not sure it was the right call, but that's an example of like, am I now thinking, oh, this was a bad call, I can't do this? Or was it the right call in that situation? Or was it not? Like, that's the sort of like, oh, how am I, like, oh, did I mess this up? Or is it this just part of variance and now I need to deal with the new situation?
Yeah, that's something I've noticed with Marvel in particular. And I actually have Vince told me this, and he's like, because the variance is so high in Marvel, it becomes really hard to figure out why you lost. And I think the answer to figuring out why you lost is play a lot. And now, obviously, that's not feasible for everybody, but what playing a lot, like the same thing does, or maybe you could play a whole bunch of different things, but playing, like, if you're trying to like tune a list, like playing that list a lot, what that does is it gives you a bunch of reference points to, you know, okay, I lost this game and I keep playing, but maybe you do the same things in the games that you lost, but you end up winning those, you know? So then you know that like your decision was actually correct. You just had bad luck the first time.
That's very true. That's a very good point. I think basically what you would need to do is set up a bunch of situations that are at least on surface level the same, and just take the same action in every single one of those instances and see how, and sort of like look at how do they pan out. I mean, that is obviously not feasible, like you said, but it's one of those things where people think about like it. The way our brain works with dice in general is that we have such a hard time seeing the big picture. I have another good example from the WTC. I was playing Rich Mid. I was playing my 3-wide Brotherhood with Thanos versus his CGR and normal Ghost Rider and Bill and Star-Lord and Rocket. I think it was 20, and I decided to play one threat down to be able to get the 3-wide Thanos, Magneto, and Juggernaut. And I ended up winning, and towards the end of that game, I had a lot of luck with dice, I would say. And I came away from the game sort of looking at, hey man, I kind of stole that game because of the good dice luck. But then I thought back and I was like, well, earlier in the game we had an incinerated Thanos who had taken like 8 damage, and I activated that Thanos. He basically walked back, shook his incinerate, and got patched up for 5. So he was sort of okay again. And then Rich had only Rocket left to activate. He walks up, casually just one-shots Thanos to put him over his Dayside. I don't remember if it was KO or Dayside. It doesn't really matter. The important thing is knowing when the spikes come, or like looking at the entirety of the match and looking at like when did these spikes happen and how influential were they, were interesting. Because like my spikes, they came, but they just came later in the game. And they were surprisingly all Magneto spikes on his defense rolls, which was like, okay. So I think Magneto survived on 1 for like 3 attacks, 2 of them being Ghost Riders. I think he was incinerated as well, actually. So it was like a whole bunch of things that he really survived. And like that is also something to take into consideration. I think Huggy a lot of the time says that Marvel is a game of timing of spikes, more than like who got the most spikes. It's like when, like if you spike your defense roll, you roll 4 successes and they roll 1 success. No one is, that's not going to do anything, that spike. But when you get the spikes, and if you get the spikes in the right situations, that's sort of, those are the things that turns a game around. And that's probably why CGR was such a nuisance, because he spiked quite a lot and he spiked quite consistently. It was also why Old Bucky was a nuisance, because Old Bucky shot so many times during a game that some of them were bound to spike, and there was a higher chance of spiking at a relevant time.
Yeah, that was something I noticed when I played a lot of Shield, was that, you know, Shield was like a massive volume of low dice attacks, and you're basically just shooting things until you spike them. And like, right, but it's like very important to not tilt when like your attacks don't do anything. You know, you kind of just have to keep trusting that the spikes will come. You know, it's like, all right, I'm going to activate Bucky. I'm going to make 4 attacks and they do nothing. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, we just keep going. Like this is the game plan. Like I'm not making a mistake here.
And I think that's probably a good, I think playing those kind of affiliations probably train your brain in a good way. Because I think if what you start with is a 3-wide tall affiliation and you have at most 6 attacks across your entire roster, like you, and some of those, you have like 6 attacks, that is entirely possible that all of them will whiff, because that's just 6 attacks. But your opponent is playing Shield 5-wide at 15, and they get to make, I don't know how many attacks, but like probably at least 10, probably more with Bucky, well, Old Bucky, and they have grunts and shit. So,
yeah, I mean, it's like Bucky's making 4 attacks, Nick's making maybe 4 attacks with grunts, so you got 8 there, Iron Man's got 2 more, is 10. Commandos is 12, and yeah, like if they're like spendering and you got your backs, like you could be making somewhere between like 12 and 20 attacks a turn.
Yeah, that's very true. So I think that's probably one of the sort of the big things, I would say, that make a like a large difference on like training your brain. And also think having I think at one point or another in Marvel's history, it was possible to play an almost diceless game, but I don't think that's true anymore. The aggression level is a bit too high, so you're at least going to need to roll defense dice well enough to get around. So I think that the old one was like wide webs or something. That I didn't actually play that much in the early days of MCP, so I can't really tell. But I know that there were some real, like, I don't need to make a lot of rolls this game. And I think Hellfire Club is probably the closest one that exists right now, and they still need to make defense rolls.
Yeah, well, I mean, back then there was, like, the restricted list wasn't as harsh. Like, you could play, like, Medpack Sacrifice and, like, Brace and all this crazy stuff together, and then Okoye was insanely good, so you had, like, a free bodyguard, and the Enchantress had, like, unlimited bows, so you could just, like, dicelessly control everything. So, yeah, you didn't have to make a ton of attacks.
No, and that's probably it's probably good that game is gone, because that's the sort of game where you'll have a bunch of good players who will dominate everything else, because like you need to have like the players who are sort of more casual, they also need to win at times, and that's why the variance needs to be there, because otherwise they're not going to play, and then you're not going to have anyone to play with.
Yeah, the community is too small to like have a game with no variance, right?
Yeah, because no one wants to be playing chess. You want to play those stories where Hawkeye suddenly just takes out Thanos, because this is a comic book game.
Yeah, and like that's okay. You obviously just have to detach yourself from the outcome and like be able to. So I guess we should get into like I have like a couple things with me. I've had games where, you know, Chewie will be watching the game, and I will think I'm in like this garbage board state. Like I hate my board state. Like I'm probably going to lose this game. And then Chewie, he's like messaged me in the past. He's like, dude, I like your board state. Like keep going. And I'm like, that's all he says. That's all he says. And my first gut reaction is like, that's wrong. But if I like actually consider what he's telling me, I start to find my outs and I'm like, all right, hold on a minute. There actually is something here. And that's happened to me many times. And a lot of time I've had games where, you know, I had a game against one of the Swedish guys. I can't remember his name, but it was in the cuts last season. He was playing Dormammu, and I think Zemo walked up, one shot my Emma and like one shot my Captain Marvel or something like that. Like round two. And I'm like, oh God. And that's when like in TTS, you could be like, all right, I'm going to go to the bathroom. Or like if you're playing at an event, like I'll just hit the clock over to me and I'll be like, I'll be right back. And then just like calm down. Cause that's the things that like really gets me. Like I'm like pretty stable a lot of the time, but if like two of my characters get one shot, like back to back, and you just lose like half your team, those are the times where it's like, oh my God, I'm so effed now. But like, yeah, if you just spend time on your clock, walk away, and then just like try to get your mind off of it and then come back to the board state, you're like, no, this is workable.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing. Like always looking for outs. There's I actually did the same at WTC in our finals game versus Austria, because I was under by so much in round one and two versus Criminal Syndicate. At one point I was down, I believe I was down 12-4 or something. And I just basically, it clocked over to me and I just sat down in the tank for 5 minutes and just looked at it for a while. I was like, we had a lot of time at WTC. We had 1 hour clock, so I felt like that was definitely possible. And I was like, so what are the ways I am still able to win this game? What are the possible things that will make this game winnable for me? What needs to happen? And I can't really be like, and if you are stuck in the sort of, oh, if he hadn't one shot or if he hadn't done this, then you're going to be losing, because you're not focusing on solving the problem. You're just focusing on what caused it in the first place. And that's not how you're going to win it. So like always looking for those outs and taking the time to like sit back and like be like, okay, this just happened. How do I deal with it? I think it's very close to the whole Zen meditation mindset you were talking about, like getting into that headspace.
Yeah. So we could talk about that a little bit. I forgot to say this on last week's episode, but so my dad is a massive Michigan Wolverines fan. Like sometimes I think he loves the Wolverines more than he loves us. And for those who don't know, they won the national title this past season, and I had fun watching the games with him. But their quarterback, JJ McCarthy, at the beginning of every game, he would just sit out on the field and meditate right next to like the field goal post. and it became kind of like this, like the media kind of would videotape him pregame. They're like, here he goes again, like whatever. And I actually had some experience with meditation. It was back at one of my old jobs. It was like a health and wellness company. They brought in like this startup that had a truck that was like a meditation truck that these companies could pay for their employees. And it was just like this really, it was basically a yoga studio in a van, and you could just go there and kind of zone out. And, but the staff essentially taught me and how to actually get like a better headspace. And I've done a lot of yoga too, and it kind of is the same. And the gist of it is you kind of just want to, like, closing your eyes helps, because obviously you're just removing sensory input to your brain. And by doing that, you start to focus. The goal is for you to focus on your breathing. And if you do that for long enough, you start to stop thinking about other things. So then when like you're done, like maybe you have like a timer set for, I'm only going to do this for so long, or like the yoga class ends or something like that, you have like this headspace of where you're very present, and the things, you're able to focus on things around you very easily. Like whatever you want to focus on, you can do that. And it's easy to just not have things around you bother you. Yeah. And it kind of, I will say, it feels like when you know you hit it, it feels like you could fall asleep almost, but you're not. You're like not tired. It's not like that I'm exhausted, I passed out on my couch kind of like sleep. It's more like I could just like drift off right now feeling. So yeah, that's what I would say when you know that you've hit it. And I tried it out based on watching, you know, Michigan quarterback do that. And I was like, maybe I should try, apply this to Marvel. It'll be a fun experiment. LVO will be the perfect test bed. And it worked out. It worked out great, because like LVO has the long time between rounds. And maybe that even helped me out, because people would finish their game and then they would spend, you know, however long, an hour socializing. And they're like, a lot of people say, I'm out of the zone now. And the next round starts, they're like, I can't get back into the zone. And that like didn't really affect me at all. And I think that was probably a big factor, because last year's LVO in 2022, I definitely felt like the time between rounds was long, and I felt that I was out of the zone as well.
I really like that. I think my big thing, I don't remember which cast it was, but it was probably all of them, is I took the hydrate part really to heart. And it was one of those things where at WTC, we also had pretty long time between the rounds. So I had this like ritual I had where I would go fill up my water bottle. I would drink up one water bottle, and I would fill it up again just to make sure I had enough fluid in me. And I would visit the bathroom to make sure I wasn't distracted by anything like that. And then I would make sure that I left the convention hall, because there's so much noise in there. There's so much things going on. There's so many things, like so many assaults on your senses, that like getting out of there and getting into your own headspace. And I would even like you said, I would even skip the socialization part for a little while at least. And like, I just need to like move for a bit. In Sweden, a lot of the like tournaments that I go to are in sort of like smaller gaming conventions, and there's like role-playing games and things going on at the same time. So I would take like a stroll down to one of the, like, I don't know, the booths to look at some other miniatures, something like that. Just basically getting out of there for a while, clear my head, and be like, and then coming back in, and then sort of looking at the next game. And actually brings me up to another thing, and that's Huggy was very good for our team in how he managed to focus us up for every game. So we had a mantra that we kept repeating the entire tournament. I don't know if we ever told you, but basically it was, there exists no game except the next one.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I remember Huggy sat down and talked to us for a little bit before the tournament was over. So he was obviously, you know, he's still in the running. And somebody, I don't know who it was, but somebody's like, hell yeah, you guys are like still undefeated. He's like, just going for the next round.
Yep, that's the thing. We're not focusing on anything. We're going for the next round. We're focusing on winning our next game. That's it. And I think that actually helped us sort of stay focused, because we just came in and we said, well, we're focusing on winning the next round. That's it. And then we didn't have to, like, of course, after the first day, we were looking at things like, okay, so which teams are still in running? Which are we likely to face? We still had our little fine WTC document prepped with everything, every information we had. But I think the big thing was we're not focusing on maybe a potential final of three games off or whatever. We're focusing on the next game. That's it. Because if we just keep on winning the next game, we're going to win at the end. But it doesn't matter because we're just focusing on the next one. And that also means that you would be less shocked when you actually lose. Everyone but Torbjörn took one loss for our team. So everyone had to experience that. And I think it sort of helped keep us in the right mind space. And I think that's probably a good call to do even for a solo tournament. Like, sure, you can check out how the others are doing, but you're just focusing on your next game. Not, am I going to face Wakanda in the final if I get past this one? Don't worry about that. Worry about that when you get to that point. You don't need to spend your brain power processing that because there's so many ways that could go wrong for you.
Yeah, that's something you can even apply to life in general. I think a lot of people try to grapple with too big of a problem, and it becomes like unworkable. Where like in a tournament setting, your big problem is how am I going to win in the finals when it's like round three? And that's just like that's way too broad. It's too intangible. Like there's nothing to work there. Like breaking problems down into like very micro problems, and then you divide and conquer everything, and then you're able to get the result. And you could do this in a single game of MCP too, right? You're like, okay, if I just do this, like my actual problem, or I guess if you can, like there are games where I'll map out like I need this many points over two rounds to like win the game. Is that like a reasonable amount per round? Like can I safely score these? And if that's the case, then I only play for those. And in fact,
but you don't need to focus on like the one dude off in the far corner. Like, how am I going to get this extract of Toad? Well, it doesn't matter because you don't need it to win.
Right. I actually just had a great game against a Canadian guy named Mark last week. This is my round three of the league. And he was playing Kingpin. And I've been playing Wakanda. And basically, I had priority. He had Shadowlands Daredevil actually is like kind of sweet into my Hammers plan because the grunt. He ended up just like grabbing the home hammer with the grunts and like running into the corner with them. And then Daredevil grabbed off the side and whatever. And like I lost like three of the secures because I had to spread myself too thin. He basically scored like three out of four secures two rounds. And then Black Cat like stole his hammer and backed up. And then Rhino robbed her. And then Killmonger was able to kill Rhino. So like we kind of got, I was down like 6-10, and like that's not great when you're playing like a scenario tempo team. But thankfully, you know, the usurp VPs come in, put me at 8 points. And then at that point, I'm like, okay, well, Rhino's gone. Now I go last if I just don't lose activations. And so that's really good for scoring. And now it's like, how many? He's at 10, I'm at 8. So I need 8 points to win. He needs 3. He needs 6, right? So it's 3-3 and then 4-4 for me. So if I can go like 4-5 or something like that, then I win this game by 1. So then I only have to play for that many points. And like Daredevil ended up getting 2 hammers and running to the corner. And I'm like, good, I'm not playing for those hammers anyway. See ya.
Exactly. Very good. Yeah. I like that. I think that's one of the things. Also, this is actually where, like, always looking for those outs and always looking at what is my win condition in this game. And that's something that I trained a lot with Brotherhood, because usually my win condition would, like we talked about on the Brotherhood episode, my win condition when playing specifically Magneto would be at first to take away his activations and then to control him. Knowing when I sort of pass that bar, pass that sort of the limit, is a very good, like, being able to learn that is very good. And being able to sort of see that and not be like locked into some Oonga Boonga mechanic of I'm going to charge you with things and kill you as much as I can simply because I can. It's not what wins you the game. The 16 points wins you the game. I actually want to commend my opponent in this week's TTS game because he did just this versus me. So I was playing my Cabal list. I was prepping Cabal to go into the 2-day tournament. I think I'm probably going to switch that up now with CGR nerfed. But so he had Okoye standing on a back scoundrel holding a hammer. Like she's worth 2 VPs. And he had a bunch of things that were in very threatening situations, but I had a bullseye standing opposite Okoye. So basically, if bullseye doesn't die, Okoye is dead. I also had a X-23 that could move towards Okoye and spender her. which probably also means that she's almost certainly dead. Not entirely as certain, but probably. So my opponent was very good in dealing with this because he was like, okay, so my first priority needs to be to take down Bullseye. That's it. Bullseye, there's no dice involved. He just kills her because she's on one. So my opponent first, correctly, one-shots Bullseye with a Stark Armoured Ultron. So I was like, yeah, okay, so he's out. And then he attacked X-23, flubbed it, but made sure that, because he was using Spender, but threw her far enough that I wouldn't be able to take out Okoye. Those two moves made sure that he was still in the game. If either of those fails, he's probably out of the game. Like, correctly assessing that, and there were so many things that he could have done. He also made sure to save, and like, this comes into my next part that also is actually very poker-esque, which is that taking risks when you're playing below is something you're going to need to do. Like, you're going to have to go for the, like, you're going to have to go for the low odds plays that gives great results, if those are your only outs, if that's the only chance you have of winning. And the more you are behind, the more you're probably going to have to do this. If you have a better chance to take it, then take it. But like, if you're 3 or 4 points behind, you are going to have to take more risks to be able to try and claw your way back. That's also true from poker, because if you're playing in a tournament, if you have a short stack, if you don't have enough money to be able to cover enough blinds, a lot of poker references, sorry, but if you don't have enough, like, you're only going to be in for 4 or 5 more rounds with the money you have. You need to start taking risks with, like, cards that aren't as good as you would otherwise. That's the same thing in MCP. You need to start taking risks. So my opponent actually had a plan to, he had saved Wakanda Forever for a long time. I had actually killed Black Panther, top of 3, I think. So he didn't have a leadership anymore, but he did have Wakanda Forever left. So he double moved his Okoye onto my Simo and did Wakanda Forever. And then he was stuck in this sort of like he needed Simo to go down to be able to play one more round. Or if he even wins there, I'm not sure. I think he wins there if he gets it. But the problem is that Simo is on 2 power and he has 3 or 4 health left. So if he does the physical attack, I can do Master Swordsman and then probably survive. If he does the energy attack, I have enough power to pay for counterattack, and that just one-shots Okoye, probably. So, like, he still needed to do the play because that was his out. He needed to take out Simo. And it didn't work because Simo didn't die, and then Simo did a counterattack. And, I mean, that's what happens, because that was a low risk, like a low chance of success play, but it was his one out, and he identified it, and he went for it. Because there were a few other outs that didn't involve, especially because one of the activations he had left was Shuri, who basically can't take anyone out. She can only push people. So that was like finding and identifying the outs, even if they're low chance of success, is also how you win games. Because you're going to hear, like, those are going to be your most memorable games when you realize, hey, if I can just do 4 damage to this guy, throw that guy into the other guy, and then bring back the Ultron drones and then spender someone to throw them into the Ultron drones. That's when you figure those things out and it just works, like, you're going to remember those games forever because they're amazing.
Shout outs to Ultron for being really fun to play.
Yes, exactly. Very true. That was one of the reasons I loved playing Malekith's leadership as well, because like, oh, if I can get the leadership trigger here, I can do this with that guy and that, blah, 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 and there's the whole train just keeps on rolling.
Yeah, that was something really cool with Malekith, and it was like, oh, I could overextend my Red Skull when normally this would be bad because I'm not activating him first next round and he could just get killed. But it's like, oh, wait, no, this is fine because I kill this model with Malekith and then I leadership Red Skull back to safety.
I love playing Malekith more for the leadership than anything else.
His leadership is so fun to play.
That leadership is amazing to play because you have it's Sam's leadership, but you have control over it because you get to decide when you attack things. That is like, I'm still I still miss playing Mal simply because of leadership. That's the big thing. Well, it is what it is. So I think being able to sort of like recognize those low variance plays the low chance of success plays and still realizing this is my out. Like, I can't, I mean, I can realize that this is a really, really bad out. Like, how big of a chance is it that my Toad is going to one-shot Red Skull too? Well, it's not a big chance, but if it's the one thing that I need to do to win, then that's what I need to do. It's just, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. And also to just like speak more of my experiences is I had my most recent game in the league. I had played against Asgard, and it was like Meteor, Skrull, and Asgard can be scary in that, like, I'm always like nervous going into Asgard, and the game is usually either fine or it's a train wreck.
Yep.
And, like, yep. And it's 100% dependent on like how well Thor plays.
Yep. Or, is this and, fast Thor or?
Yeah, exactly. So like, I'm always like the round one's usually fine because like they can't like really engage me profitably. And then round two, it's like, all right, I'm clenching my butt cheeks. Like I'm basically in my head, I'm ready to adapt to either way. If he plays like a really passive Thor where he just like move, then I'm just like, cool, I can keep playing scenario and like keep bullying this team. If Thor comes in, starts swinging and actually like starts one-shotting things, then I have to start being like, okay, well now I have to start rolling dice too to make up for the loss. If I continue to play conservatively after this, I will lose. So that's kind of the gist of it. You kind of have to be like ready to adapt to what happens.
That's really much what I love about this game as well, is that like you can like you'd almost look at every turn as a puzzle. Like, what are my optimal ways of acting here? Like, I played a terrible game this week's lunch meet. I actually played Mal into Mystique Brotherhood, and I knew this was probably a mistake on Fisk. Like, I got super out by, I believe it was Eric I was facing. Yeah, Eric Lodahl I was facing. I got super outplayed. And I was like, okay. I was starting to look at, okay, did I was sort of like examining. So did I get diced here? No. I screwed myself over in turn zero. And then I also got outplayed. I made bad decisions. And like looking over that and realizing that Eric played a stable, good game. He could play for the low variance things because he was ahead on a scenario, which I knew he was going to be. I couldn't do that because I was behind. I needed to do like risky plays that didn't work out. And I put myself into the situation where I needed to do the risky plays. So like that's the thing you need to remember as well. Like, what led up to the point where I needed to roll all these dice, and I needed way more of them than was expected to be able to win. Like, could I change anything so that I didn't have to rely on dice? We have a saying sometimes where we say, I played badly and my dice didn't save me. Which is like, yeah, okay. That is actually something that can happen. The flip side could be, I played well, but my dice failed me. But that's very, like, the thing is, like I've spent a lot of time talking about how you can make the right decision, but the outcome isn't one you needed or wanted. But it's still important to realize that dice is just dice. You can't just blame them. You need to just look at, you can't control the dice. You can never control the dice in any way, shape or form. They will just fall the way they will. And you need to like look at, what could I have done different? Could I have done anything different? Was this the right call? Those are like the thoughts that need to go through your mind, not, oh, if only that dice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think to package this into like something to take away from, it's really like, actually first I want to say one more thing. I've been around Pat Dunford like twice now. I've been to events that he's been at and like, I see him on TTS and he's in the community. And I was like, dude, Pat never tilts. If he does, you can't see it. So like every time I'm on the verge of tilting, I'm like, would Pat be tilting right now? Would he be upset? And the answer is like basically always no. And I'm like, all right, I'll just strive to be like Pat.
And it's one of those things where it's so nice to see him as well, because he'll be like he will be sharing his opponent's models on as they are killing his models. Which is like, oh, Simo, you did some really nice damage. Like that's like, I think that's a good thing to aspire to, like you said, like being able to sort of be, and I try to do that as well. Like, you're going to fail at some points, especially if it's like a tense game, but be happy for your opponent. And like, if they're having a great time, and they're having one of their favorite characters roll high and do well, and like that thing, be happy for them. like it can be hard, but it feels like it's unless it's old CGR, but like, you can still feel like okay, so they're having a great game and like be happy for their characters that they're doing cool things.
Right.
Call that out as well.
Yeah, that's just a good thing to be. It's important to be a good opponent, right? Yeah, you don't like the worst is when someone would play old CGR and then roll 5 power round 1, teleport up, one shot 2 characters, and then be like, oh, yeah, he does this all the time. Or
yeah,
or
and that's
it's just the worst.
That's the thing, though. This is the thing, though, because CGR exemplifies exactly what I talked about on how our brain learns, because everyone will have their story about the high rolling CGR, because the high rolling CGR is a terror, and you will never forget how unfair that game felt. Even though it happens in like, how many games does he roll 5 power? Does he roll 5 power in round 1? It's like 1 out of 10, if even that. Like then this is old CGR we're talking about for clarity, but like, it isn't going to happen that often, but because you were so screwed by it, like I have players in my local meta who says I can't play that character into CGR because I just lose. But like that was one game, and I remember that game that you played because it absolutely screwed you. So like you will take that away. Your brain will tell you you tried this. Remember how brutally you got beaten. And I was like, well, that was like, sure, it was CGR, but it was like CGR when he rolled super hot on both his power and all his dice. It's not going to happen every single game.
Yeah, I think it's important to be like a skeptic of your own thoughts and ideas. If like you have an idea or a feeling or a thought, and it's important to ask yourself, like, is this actually true, or is this all just BS?
I liked what you said about Chewy, because like when you have like friends watching your games, they are not invested in the same way that you are, so they have a much more pragmatic view of it. Like the number of times you see people calling out moves on TTS, like when they're watching a stream, and be like, oh, this would be a good move for him, or this would be a good move, or I wonder why he didn't just do that, simply because, well, you're on the outside, you're not invested, so you're just looking for the optimal place without emotion attached, while the guy who's in there is probably, I don't know, annoyed by dice or similar things.
Yeah, or they're attached to some game plan that's no longer like a good idea or something or whatever, you know. That's why that's kind of like why like the stream chat, they can like turn on a game, it's like in the middle of round 3 and they're like, "Oh yeah, here's the best move. It's very easy to find." And then like the person in the table like just doesn't see it. And it's like I said, they're just attached to some like their emotions or their thoughts of how the game, like maybe their expectations were a certain way. And it's very similar to like when that happens in real life, you can just walk away and then you can forget about everything that's happened previously in the game and just play for now.
Exactly. But that's why it's good to have get yourself a regular training partner. Get yourself someone who is interested in playing the game at the level you are, and make sure that you like when you're playing at the local game club or when you're playing at TTS, have people watch each other's game, like watch your friend's game for a bit. Look at things like this. These are some of the things you could have done, or I thought you did this well, because they are more or less impartial, I would say. Like they are not attached, so they can be like, oh, that was a cool play. It'll be, oh, that just felt like a desperate play for me. So these are all these things that are like, I don't know who said it, but like the dice can make a decision look extremely smart or stupid or very, very stupid. So,
yep, that's Morgan. Morgan's quote is, he's like, yeah, Marvel dice can make the right play look like a genius play or the worst play in the world. And it's funny, more football stuff, American football. I'm from Michigan originally, and I'm a big Lions fan. And the Lions are like kind of known for going for it on fourth down more than they probably should. My dad gets really worked up about it. He like, we'll watch the Lions games together. He's like, I can't believe they're going for it on fourth down. Like, why not just take the easy points, scoring a field goal or something? And I'm like, bro. So like, if they get this though, it's like lights out. Sometimes you just got to play for like, you got to take that big gamble, man. Cause the payoff is just massive. And it's like, if they hit the fourth down, you're like, oh my God, he's a genius. If they miss it, then everyone's like, he's an idiot. Fire him. Right.
Yep, definitely. So what's the best plan? Is it like 25% just outright win the game this round, or like 50% that you win it next round? Which one of these are like the correct plays? Are you playing for tie and going into another round, or are you trying to play out the game for the 25% chance of actually just scoring out now? So there's all these, like, analyzing these things is an art, but I think that the main thing is just whenever a big spike happens, take a moment, sit back, think about, did I make the right call even though this happened? Or, well, same thing with fluffs, and like, was it the right call? Yes, no. Does this change how I play now? That's it.
That's basically just the crux of it, is try to remove yourself from what's happened and just focus on the current turn. And if you get spiked, you get spiked. It doesn't matter. You just keep playing. And just, it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, I just have to keep finding my outs. That's all I have to do. And it helps if you like actually find your out and then you make it. And at, like, I guess before you even make the out, you can be like, at least if this fails, I know I made the right decision. I tell myself that. I'm like, yeah, this could backfire and it doesn't matter because I made the right call. It is what it is.
Yeah, because this was my way to win. If it works, I win.
And it's like, yeah, if it messes up, it's not on me. It's just on Various, you know, whatever. We move on. I think that's definitely helpful for people. I think if I was giving like one piece of advice to people, try to be like Pat.
Yeah, try to be like Pat. It's always good.
Yeah. that's really just the end of it. But yeah, I think for WTC next year, I'm definitely going to try to coach my team like Huggy was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I think it's good.
So, but yeah. So thank you for coming on.
Thanks, man.
Is there anything you want to shout out to people or before we sign off?
Oh, yeah, that's right. So we have a big tournament coming up in Sweden on the 8th and 9th of June in Malmö. It's just across the bridge from where WTC was held. We are throwing a up to 64 player tournament in the Malmö Brewing Company, which is a brewery. So it is modeled after Vincent Kirchhoff's Second Wind tournament. We figured that seems really cool. So we want to try and do that. It is also actually now an LVO Invitational qualifier. So if you're in the area or you're in Europe at all, please come play at our tournament. The relevant links should be in all the Discords, and I'm going to send them to Mike as well so you can put them in the show notes.
Hey, maybe I could just hit that 11-hour direct flight to Copenhagen and come play.
You are absolutely
qualified for LVO.
I will
in Europe.
I will comp your ticket if you come. 100%.
Holy crap! Okay.
Yeah, we'll do 100%. If you come, I will comp your ticket.
All right.
Cool.
I'm gonna have to look at that. That'd be super fun.
Yeah.
Also, you guys are way better than the Americans. So, like, if I go over there, just playing games over there,
well,
come back and I'm like, oh hell yeah!
If we look at the LVO stats, at least our webs players are.
Oh, dude!
No, I'm kidding.
Americans' webs players are not great.
No, I think
we have some good webs players.
You do. I think
they do struggle.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Whoever it was that said it, I think it was, I don't remember if it was you or Sploosh. But basically, there was a bunch of players who were, well, maybe it wasn't you, but a bunch of players who were playing webs who probably sort of jumped the bandwagon a bit at LVO.
Yeah. They're also like our known top webs players in the US weren't at LVO. So, yeah, there's a lot of people that, I mean, they could have been playing webs for a long time. I just don't know about them, or they don't have results or anything like that. But yeah, we don't really have like our Aaron or our, you know, Connor show up and play webs or something like that.
No, I think it's very much I guess it's a playstyle thing. Europe is a bit different than the US.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I find the Europeans always seem to find like clever ways to like win games, and Americans are very unga bunga. And there's definitely unga bunga players in Europe for sure.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. I was one of them for a long time. That's how you start out in MCP, so unga bunga player.
I'm probably overgeneralizing. I talked about this on the Discord, and to not get off on tangent too much, but it was the US really suffers from our geographically large area. All of our best players are very spread out, so they have a hard time, you know, learning off of each other. So when you come to like a WTC, it becomes very hard to actually have like something that's really cohesive, firing on all cylinders. Whereas like you guys, your like whole team plays out of the same store. So like, Okay, Anders, I want to thank you for coming on.
Hey, thank you, man.
Yeah, this was super fun, and I think we offered a lot of good advice here.
I hope so. So, yeah. And if not, yep. If you can yell at us on some of the Discord. Yeah,
people can always reach out on Discord. I'm more than happy to chat with you while I'm bored at work.
So, cool.
And with that, we'll be in episode of The Danger Room, and see you next time. Adios.